KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
And you are listening to KHUM, and we are getting into Coastal Currents right now, which is sponsored by some pretty wonderful folks, Bayside Garden, Glasshouse Garden Supply and Solutions, Eco Goods Store. Joining me on the line is James Sumich, who is a marine biology expert and professor of all kinds of cool things. Hey!
Hi.
Thank you for joining me. Delia would normally be with us as well, but she is stuck in a webinar, so our condolences going out to her for that, but...
No problem.
So you are coming to town, and you're going to be giving a talk to the Explore North Coast Kayak meeting on May the 15th.
On Monday evening, yes.
So what are you going to be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about gray whales. So we've got, there's just so much to cover. We only have an hour, so it should be a lot of fun.
And you are a real expert on gray whales. You've co-authored nearly 20 papers on them.
Yes, and a few books. And in fact, I will have my new gray whale book available for signing Monday evening as well.
E. Robustus, The Biology and Human History of the Gray Whales.
That one, yes.
Interesting, The Biology and Human History. How does that interaction play out?
Well, one of the things that has been really important about gray whales in terms of their population, their distribution, has been our interaction, especially in terms of about a century of commercial whaling on them. And, you know, the population still has suffered some of the impact, or is suffering some of the impact of that human activity and our interaction with them. But, you know, certainly the emphasis has shifted to couple of different kinds of human interactions. One is the kind of research that I and others do, and the other is just this very large-scale West Coast whale-watching industry.
Which, you know, I experienced for the first time, you know, in third grade, like many, many kids, especially in the L.A. area, it's a rite of passage to go out and watch the gray whales as they migrate.
Exactly.
And it is a life-changing experience. They are so magnificent.
They are, and if you get close to them, and that's one of the beauties of gray whales, is that they are coastal, they're very accessible, there are lots of them, and they go by our coast twice every year. So they're very, very accessible to thousands, well, actually to millions of people.
Right, and they're making their northern migration now to their feeding grounds.
Yeah, the north migration is really a twofold migration. The adult males and early pregnant females went by here a couple months ago. So it's mostly moms with their now 5 or 6 month old calves that are going north.
Oh, I didn't realize it was a two-phase deal.
Yeah, there's a fairly large quiet period in between the two.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about what your research is like.
Well, I've been looking primarily at, I kind of started with the question of looking at this migration. We have adult mature females that get pregnant typically every other year, and when they leave the feeding grounds in the fall to go to Baja California, they are completely fasting the entire migration south, the whole time they're in the lagoon, and much of the northward migration as well. And so consequently, my early question was, how do they do that? Because they're swimming, you know, 10 or 12,000 miles. They're giving birth to a 1-ton baby and then growing that calf out to 3 tons or so before the calf starts feeding independently.
That is a lot of energy.
About how they do that, yes.
Yeah, that's amazing. When you put it like that, that is remarkable.
Yeah, and you know, grays are kind of at the small end of the size range. They get to maximum about 50 feet, maybe 55 feet. And 30, 35 tons. And so that's probably about as small as you can be and still have enough space aboard to store that much fat to do that kind of fasting migration.
And they do that every other year, basically?
Every other year.
Wow. That's very interesting. So what have you found?
Well,
I mean, that's like saying describe your life's work.
They really do this.
Okay.
And they're those females are just, well, all of the adults, but especially those females, are capable of storing several tons of fat before they leave their feeding grounds to serve as a fuel supply for this whole migration reproduction effort that they go through.
And it's been obviously a very long time. How long do gray whales live? What's their typical lifespan?
We don't know.
That's why I couldn't remember.
I hate that answer, but it's the answer to too many of these questions, because unlike toothed whales like killer whales and dolphins that usually produce annual growth rings in their teeth, so if you can get a tooth from one, you can answer that question. But with baleen whales, and gray whales are baleen whales, we have no way of absolutely determining their lifespan over short periods of time.
Do we have any kind of educated guesses at this point, or is the research still too young?
Well, I think there are a couple of things we can say. One is that we know that some females that have been killed in scientific studies in the past and studies were probably in their 70s. And the two oldest ones in this one study that was done were probably mid-70s, and they were both pregnant at the time. So we don't know if that's an old whale, a middle-aged whale, a young whale. I'm not sure.
Wow. I had no idea.
There has been in the last 10 or even 20 years a continuing effort to do photographic identification of individuals and then follow them through time. So give us another century, and we might have a better answer for that.
That is phenomenal. That really is. What other extraordinary things have you found out about our coastal friends there, the gray whale?
Well, one of the things that we didn't know 40 years ago when I started was that there is a kind of a loosely ill-defined group of whales that, instead of migrating all the way back up to the Bering Sea and the Arctic Ocean in the summer, tend to spend their time foraging through summer months between about where you are and southeast Alaska. And this is a group that has come to be known as the Pacific Coast Feeding Group, or the PCFGs. And they're pretty well identified now as a separate subset of this whole population.
Do these whales not calve in Baja California, or do they calve further north?
As far as we know, they do. They make the south migration south of here, but many of them do not go any further north than here. And here can be anywhere from Northern California to Alaska.
Okay, because you're basically at Oregon State University, right?
Right.
At the Hatfield Marine Center, Science Center.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
That is, they're so impressive, I guess is really the best word for it, because they do make quite an impression when you see them. But the more we learn about them, the more fascinating they seem to become.
Well, I think one of the other things that have been fascinating a lot of people, and we still don't understand it very well, is that, again, starting about 40 years or so ago, we started seeing this, especially in one of the winter breeding lagoons, this behavior that's come to be known as friendly behavior, where animals are individually in seeking out apparent contact with people in small boats. So they approach boats, they have contact, there's a lot of, quite often, rubbing and scratching going on, and we don't know why they do this. We don't see this much in other species of whales, certainly not to the extent that we do at grays.
You know, that's interesting, because when I was so young and going out whale watching, and I went several times as a child, it seemed like they liked our boat. It seemed like they wanted us to see them. Maybe we were kids with wishful thinking, but that's how it felt.
Maybe a little bit of both, but I've certainly had that same experience, where we've actually had mothers of 6 or 8 week old calves pushing their calves over to our boat for contact, even though the calf wasn't necessarily anxious to do this. So I think there is some appeal, and it may be that, you know, if you live in the ocean and you use your senses quite a bit to discover what's going on around you, in the water, especially murky coastal water, there isn't a lot going on out there. And so this just may be some additional stimuli that they can deal with pretty comfortably. And so they do.
So we go out to watch them and they come in to watch us.
And they come in to watch us.
That makes a lot of sense.
Well, and that's an important point right there, because this so-called friendly behavior, we've often kind of assigned it as a whale behavior, a change in the behavior of these whales. But the other thing that's happened simultaneously is that there's been a change in the behavior of people, because these people are going out and actually letting these very, very large, potentially dangerous animals approach them and having no fear of it.
And we're not trying to kill them anymore.
And we're not trying to kill them anymore. And there are probably few, if any, gray whales that are around now that were around when commercial whaling was still going on.
That was still a lingering topic and still a topic of great concern when I began my association with the whales. So it's nice to see that has changed.
It has. And I don't think that there's anything that's going to change that back for gray whales, because it looks as though they're population seems to be limited around 20,000-22,000 animals, and it's pretty much leveled off at that level. So that's probably what we're going to be looking at for a long time.
Those numbers are a lot better than they used to be, I'm happy to say.
Absolutely.
What can you tell us about what's been going on? I think it's in Central California around Monterey with the shark attacks on whales.
I think you might be referring to the orca killer whale attack.
Yo, the orcas, not sharks. Sorry.
No,
something else with teeth. Odontocetes, not sharks.
Moms and calves. This time of the year, moms and calves are migrating north, and they don't travel in big groups. They're usually just a mom calf pair by themselves, and those calves are vulnerable to predation by killer whales. And it seems like the two places that are the most dangerous spots for them, one is Monterey Bay, where the animals are crossing the bay, and so they're getting out into deep water away from the coastline. And then the other one is when they get farther north, going through the Aleutian Islands, where they're kind of channeled in between islands where there's quite a bit of predation there.
Kind of like an old Western ambush type of situation, but in
exactly.
The water.
And the best estimates we have now are probably something like 30-35% of every year's calf crop gets taken by killer whales before they're 6 months of age.
That is astonishing when you think about the amount of energy that gets put into the growth and birthing and nurturing of a single calf, and it's a two-year project.
Well, that's it. It's an enormous amount of investment by that mother, and so typically those mothers defend those calves extremely well, but if they're up against a group of five or six killer whales, there's really not a lot they can do except hide. And so they tend to hug the coast more closely, stay in kelp beds, things like that.
Wow, extraordinary. So you're going to be speaking to Explore North Coast Kayak on Monday, and
yes.
Everybody's welcome to attend and hear what you have to say, and get a copy of E. Robustus, The Biology and Human History of the Gray Whales. And I
Absolutely.
Assume you will be willing to autograph as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know if your listenership goes as far north as Crescent City.
It does.
The same thing there on Tuesday night.
Tuesday night in Crescent City, where?
At the College of Redwoods.
Oh, wonderful. It's a beautiful little campus.
Yeah, it is.
Really pretty.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I say that with great pride because I'm an associate faculty at CR, but at the main
campus. Okay.
Well, thank you so very much for coming down to California and talking to us and for calling in today. And we will have this conversation at podcasted at khum.com and also posted at khum.com in honor of my guest, James Simich, and his extraordinary work on whales. This is Yellow Ostrich and Whale on KHUM.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search KHUM in iTunes.